3 is Oakdale Through the Years, and episode 1 of that is the 30th anniversary of the show. Give us a quick highlight from that episode.
This is, I think, the best anniversary episode ever on soaps, and the whole week was really good. Chris and Nancy were celebrating 50 years of marriage, and the show, that was kind of the backdrop of the show celebrating 30 years, and a lot of people came back. They sort of started writing out the Stewarts. That was one thing Doug Marlin did that a lot of traditionalists didn't like. He wrote out Dee Stewart and some other people. So they all came back. Penny came back. Don came back. Their kids. So a lot of people came back. At the end, Chris and Nancy, and everybody sing it always. I mean, Chris and Nancy kind of sing it to each other at the last bit. And this was, I think, the last episode Don McLaughlin was in. He died right after this. And he looked really frail anyway during this. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it's just so perfect. And it sums up, like, why those of us who've watched for, you know, many years and with our families, like, why we love soaps. I think this is the best episode of the whole thing.
On today's very special episode of the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by daytimeconfidential.zaptoit.com, we welcome our pal Roger Newcombs, editor of We Love Soaps, who is also a consultant on the amazing new SoapClassics.com project that is going to bring out, or is bringing out, or has brought out, As the World Turns on DVD, and plans to do more with the entire Procter & Gamble Classic Soap Library. Roger, welcome.
Hey there. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we are so excited. We have been screaming about like 5 different subjects for years. DVDs. What else are we always talking about, Luke? And it's like, we're getting them all, you know, soaps online, DVDs. It's like,
integration.
Right. And it's like, hello. Who knew it was happening? You knew, Roger.
We just counted down our 25 biggest blunders, and one thing we said was soaps never really merchandise themselves
enough.
And, I think this is a great thing. I just want to correct you on one thing. It's not the entire P&G library, because another blunder, they wiped away most of the other shows.
Yeah, the six shows that are left. Yeah, they did like, what, a kabillion? I mean, what were there, 13 at one time in production?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad that so much television history is gone, but I'm glad we have what we have, like 32 years or 31 years of these shows, and, you know.
So to clarify, they have the distribution rights to Guiding Light, As the World Turns, Search for Tomorrow, Another World, Edge of Night, and Texas, right?
Right, and Texas, they have the whole run, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, cool.
I can't wait for Another World. Cannot wait.
So, Roger, how did you become part of this project? Let's start with that.
Just kind of a fluke. You know, Linda Marshall Smith, who is the founder of SoapDome.com, I guess she was in touch with these guys from Soap Classics originally, and she pointed them my way. And said,
wow.
This would be the perfect guy to do this. I really owe her a debt of gratitude. And, it really was. I mean, you know, I'm a P&G guy, so this was like a total dream thing to work on for me.
I know. Yeah, I was – everyone I've talked to, I'm like, who better to pick – to be involved in picking this collection, because you are the – Procter & Gamble soap librarian, you know, you already were, and now, you know, you officially are in a sense. So let's talk about the As the World Turns collection. What led to the selection of this specific 4-disc compilation divided between Great Weddings, Secrets and Scandals, Oakdale Through the Years, and Villains and Vixens? What went into your process of picking this? I know it had to be hard, considering there's 50-something years. Well, you guys have, what, from 79, so that's still, what, 32 years of stuff to pick from.
Right. It starts around September 1979, just around the time Dan Stewart died, which I think was another blunder. But none of those episodes I'd ever seen or remembered, because, you know, it was the fall. I was obviously in school. There was no VCR. So I don't remember any of that. And But anyway, when I got involved, I think they'd already settled on 20 episodes. So they wanted to do different sets of different categories. So they had a few ideas they brought to the table. And I created this huge list of like 30 other category possibilities. And they had to air full episodes. So it was going to be, you know, a category like weddings. And then you just had to pick 5 episodes to go under that. So, you know, that was the constraints that we had. So, you know, we just went back and forth for a couple of weeks trying to figure out, you know, what worked best and what would maybe sell the best and what would be a good cross-section to represent the show to kick this off, because how well this does is really going to determine what happens in the future. So we ended up settling on these. I think like Oakdale through the years, at one point there was a whole Christmas category because it's going to be on sale, you know, Christmas season. So there were 5 Christmas episodes and then anniversary episodes, and those sort of got combined, and that's why it's kind of a mixture of things in that category. But it was a back and forth process. You know, they really took a lot of my input. Sometimes there was a little pushback in terms of, you know, you're really not representing like the mid 90s very well. There's like a whole section of time, and I'm like, man, that was a really bad time on the show. But yes. But if you can pick one episode, then you know you can find good ones. But this was fun, and the company happens to be like a block from my apartment, so it was very convenient. When we got to the point of looking at these, I could just walk back and forth, and it was really easy.
Well, looking at the Great Weddings disc, starting with that one, you have a great 5-episode cross-section. In my opinion, Luke and I both started watching the show in 99. We followed Another World there. So we basically, you know, this is going to be great fun.
I would like a DVD just of Jack and Carly.
Well,
I would be happy.
Well, episode 5 is Carly, Tenney, marries Jack Snyder, Luke, so you should be happy. But the first two,
Tom and Margo and Steve and Betsy, those are my two favorite weddings on World Turns ever. So those are like no-brainers to me, and they feature – I mean, they're really classic. They were high-rated. Steve and Betsy was watched by 20 million people. That's the most watched episode of CBS soaps ever.
Right.
So – you know, those are really wonderful, memorable things. And Bob and Kim, I think that's a pretty classic one. And you get Julianne Moore and Marissa Tomei and some other people in that episode.
And then of course, Steve and Betsy one. Hello, Meg Ryan was Betsy. So, you know, yeah, it was really smart, in my opinion, to pick ones that are going to feature huge alums from the show in terms of marketing potential and things like that. You know, people can get to see Meg Ryan and Julianne Moore and Marissa Tomei. Of course, we, you know, when it comes to prime time, we can always go to syndication and get a good look at Marissa with her old episodes of A Different World. But you really don't have this type of a reference when it comes to soaps. And this will be unprecedented, basically, except for what I think Dark Shadows is the only daytime soap that has been on DVD before this.
Right. I mean, there's been ABC Great Weddings. There's been kind of compilation things. Mm-hmm. There were some VHS tapes. You remember Roger?
Yeah.
Thorpe and Reba Shane.
Yeah.
So, but you know, when I got down to like the 4th and 5th, I wanted Lily and Holden. They're kind of a classic couple. And in this time period, you know, maybe if we had all 54 years, we would have Penny and Jeff or some other classic couple. Mm-hmm. But in, you know, from 79 on, I think Lily and Holden were really, you know, a huge couple. And to me, this was the best wedding that they had. Because with Lily and Holden and Carly and Jack, you have multiple weddings to choose from.
Right. I was going to say, now, this isn't the first Lily and Holden wedding, because this is the Lily and Holden wedding with Martha Byrne, who we know and love as the Lily. But wasn't their first wedding with the Heather Rattray girl?
Yes, if I put that wedding on, I think Martha would come to my apartment and kill me.
I was wondering how y'all, because when I first saw it, of course I thought, okay, this better not be the first one, because that was that girl nobody remembers.
I thought she was all wrong for the role. I mean, she really gave it her all and seems like a nice person, but, this was sort of like for fans, the real first Lily and Holden wedding, because that one was so weird with a different person.
Isn't that crazy how it works out for her? Like, she is Lily. She's one of the most popular stars in daytime period. But for Lillian Holden's first wedding and the end of the show, no Martha Byrne. That's just, I tell you. But
you know, in this episode, Martha's actually pregnant. You can see it a little bit, but her son Max is now 13, and it's so funny how the time has passed. I think there's a couple of episodes where she's pregnant. I think the one when Luke comes out, she's pregnant with her daughter, who now started kindergarten. That was like 5 years ago.
Oh, cool.
It's,
well, isn't that about the time she took a tumble down the stairs?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, they could still afford stunt doubles at that time. they didn't, you know, they didn't make a pregnant Martha Byrne tumble down the flight of stairs. But disc two, speaking of Luke, is Secrets and Scandals. And let's talk about that for a bit. You have Bob and Dana face the music. And see, okay, let's start off right there. Because all I ever knew was that Bob, you know, hoed around on Kim with Susan. So you mean he was hoeing around before Susan?
So, you know, Bob and Kim met in, what, 1972? So it took 13 years to get married. They weren't really, it wasn't like they were the couple. I mean, Kim was really in love with Dan. Bob, I mean, they both were married four times before they got married to each other.
Now, Dan was Dan Stewart.
Each other's fifth spouse.
Fans, that's Emily's dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Dan Stewart. I mean, an iconic character, and they killed him off, and that's around the time this starts. This category, we sort of came up at the end where we started combining things. Like, we wanted, you know, there's a factor of showing classic things, and you know me, I would have put, like, everything from, you know, the old classic stuff, and I would have put nothing from the past 10 years. But we really wanted to show Luke or Luke and Noah or something that kind of represented that fan base.
Right.
We wanted to show different things. And I think at one point we had three categories, and they said to me, we have three happy categories and one kind of bad category, so we need to even them out. So we sort of said, let's have some more scandalous things on here. So at one point I watched the entire month of September 1979 on a computer. Mm. And I was trying to – there's no recap for that. There's no – there's nothing on YouTube. There's never been anything from 1979 on YouTube. So it was hard to figure out what to do. I couldn't just pick an episode. For most of these, I said, okay, I want when Lily finds out she was adopted, Iva with a pitchfork. I just had to figure out the date, and you know, we worked from there. I didn't know what I wanted, and I was trying to finagle something from this time onto the set. And so I watched that entire month, and then I came across this episode where everybody goes to the Joffrey Ballet. And it's just so weird. It's on location in 1979. And Chris and Nancy look so young, and they're in color. Usually you see them when they're young, they're in black and white. It's like the 1960 mm-hmm. clip. Or they're older, like their anniversary. But in 1979, they were in color, and they still look kind of young. So I'd never really seen them like that. And this features Peter Simon, who was Ed Bauer for many years after that. And so I got to that episode. It was great. It was almost all on location. And then I watched the next episode, which is what I ended up picking, and it had some great Grant and Lisa, Grant Coleman and Lisa, many last names. And so he was my favorite husband of hers. And so, you know, I thought, man, with Grant and Lisa plus this ballet stuff going on, this is a really good one. So I was able to work that onto the set.
Nice. Now, in the second episode is, as you mentioned, Lily's world crumbles, which is when she finds out that she's really a Snyder or adopted Snyder, and that Iva is her mother and all that good stuff, which, you know, I always chuckle whenever I read the history of As the World Turns, because you basically find Lily, you know, rich girl Lily finds out that Holden's sister is her mother, and then, oh, no problem, because Iva was adopted too, so that means Holden and Lily aren't related. But
right,
damn,
yeah, these guys brought me on as a subject matter expert, and so I would write up descriptions for the episodes, and then they would ask me questions like, this doesn't make any sense, it seems like you're talking about this incestuous thing going on, and I had to explain this whole situation where Lily finds out she's, you know, Iva's daughter, but she's dating Holden, and then actually, Iva was adopted, and then Iva was raped by her cousin Josh, but actually Josh was adopted too. And it was really, they were like, what? I'm like, don't ask. Everybody who buys this will know what we're talking about.
They look, they kept it in the family down on Snyder Farm. Episode three is something about Carly. Now, set that up for us.
You guys, this is, I had kind of, late 90s kind of tuned out of World Turns a little bit. I was busy and moved out to California. Another World was my favorite show. So obviously, like you guys, the second that Monday came around, I started watching again. I'm sure it was weird for World Turns fans to have Jake and Vicky just show up. But so this was that summer, and Carly had collected $50 million by having Parker and being married to John. Rosanna set up this whole thing where she had to be married by the end of 1998 to the father of her baby. And long story, this is Barbara and Hal's engagement party, where Brad walks in and reveals that John isn't really the father. It's Parker is Hal's son, and it was a big scandal. And of course, at that point, Carly became, enemy number one of the town, which happened many times over the years.
Yeah, now I remember that, and my first thought, I'm gonna be honest, my first thought when I started watching and got into Carly's story, I was like, why do they have this young girl with all these old men? Because at that point, she was like hoeing around with all the patriarchs on the show. So yeah, Carly was a mess. And of course, during our time watching, she pretty much was one of the top two or three central characters. And I think that'll be good for a lot of the newer fans who probably did come to the show from another world or during that brief Hogan Sheffer era when the show really got good again. Now, episode four, The Explosive Truth. What is that about?
This is where Barbara goes to the boathouse and then it explodes. And, from there she becomes like Darth Barbara for
Yes,
next year. So, what was the question?
no, I just said, no, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, so when Craig was showing out and
Right, this was really good. This was at Hogan at his best, and as the world turns had really started clicking, and this was really a good episode. And you think about the last 10 years, especially the last few years of the show, it sort of became more episodic. You could watch an episode and there were seven or eight characters in it. It didn't really feel like a community. This still felt like As the World Turns, but kind of a newer, better As the World Turns. Like, he kind of modernized it a bit, and it was really mysterious and cool. And
And you've got my favorite Craig Montgomery, Hunt Block.
Now, Roger
I couldn't
will
do anything
debate
about
you on
that.
that. He loved the original.
I know. For me, Hunt Block is Craig.
Yeah, I was just
I
thinking about
love.
that. I was just thinking about that the other day. Like, Doug, Craig was kind of manipulative. He was the third wheel of Stephen Betsy, and he faked paralysis, and he was kind of a bad guy, went to prison. But then when Doug Marlin started writing the show, they really made him a sympathetic character. And so when Hunt Block came on and he was all snarky, and it just was so different. And I think Doug Marlin would have like been so ticked off to have like a snarky Craig. But a lot of fans who didn't see it before loved it, and Hunt was really great doing it. It was just so different for me as a old man who used
Yeah.
to watch the show.
And I feel you on that because that is the exact same way I felt with a lot of recast that because I loved Hunt too, but I had no history with Scott until they brought him back. And by that point, we know they didn't know what they were doing with the Craig character by the time they were just kind of revolving him in. But anyway, back to the positive stuff because this is just there's so much good stuff to talk about here. Luke coming out is episode five. Now, for me, this is really a smart choice, Roger, because as you know, this show got a whole new generation of fans, the Nuke fans, and was pretty much the first soap opera to get that cult following of people creating a YouTube channel for the Luke character and then later his Nuke romance. And to me, now this is really smart because all of the gay blogs and magazines should want to eat this up in terms of promoting this because they were all so supportive of this storyline, and it was really groundbreaking for its time in daytime. So what made you pick this episode as opposed to, say, a Nuke, kissing or something like that? What made you pick the coming out?
At one point, we wanted something Luke and Noah. Luke, the fans, And, you know, later Luke and Reed fans were really fanatical as well. But, you know, those fans were the type of soap fans who put their money where their mouth is, so they would travel to see them. They've had events in Paris and Netherlands and all over the country, and people, you know, pay money for them. So, I mean, to not include them wouldn't have been a smart, you know, wouldn't have been very smart business-wise. You know, these are sort of random episodes, and that's what this was. There was no time to, like, splice together, you know, storylines or do anything like that. It was going to be 20 random episodes in these categories or some kind of category. So, you know, Luke came out to Will, and I love that. When he came out to Kevin, it was really like at Raven Lake and really, you know, a great episode. But I thought this one, you know, was really historic because he came out to his parents, and it showed Lily and Holden. And since there's no narrative of this whole thing, I thought, okay, you see Lily young, you see Lily getting married to Holden. Now you can mm-hmm. see her with a son growing up, coming out. So you sort of kind of get the Lily story, even though it's mm-hmm. not really played out like that. So that's kind of why I picked this particular one. As far as Luke and Noah, I really wanted to have a good episode. And at one point we had celebrity guest stars or musical guests, or, you know, that was one of the categories I suggested. But mm-hmm. and so the Cyndi Lauper episode, it was like the most gay episode of soaps ever. That would have been great, but, you know, we ended up not having that category, and it really, you know, it just featured a few characters. So, you know, this one seemed to work in terms of the context of having Lily and Holden as parents versus young teens in love and then in their 20s or 30s getting married. So this was kind of that's sort of why we did it.
Have you ever thought, or is there any thought of maybe a targeted launch at some point of a Luke's romances DVD collection, like specifically targeting the lesbian, gay, transgendered audience?
Could be. You know, I it seems like, you know, talking to Mark Yates, who's the Soap Classics president, and I think you've spoken to him as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it all is going to hinge on how this does, and that's why, you know, I hope soap fans that, you know, maybe like Guiding Light will buy this, because what happens with all of these shows is going to be determined by how well this sells. If this sells really well, then, you know, we may get more DVDs and we may get them faster. If it doesn't sell well, you know, it's going to be hard to justify putting a lot of resources on, you know, editing this, because it's, and I'll explain the process to you guys at some point here, because it's not that simple. Mm-hmm. These are on old tapes, and so it would be great. I think it's going to be, you know, when I put out an interview with Mark on Thursday, and he said, we're probably going to be stuck with full episodes. They're not going to be story edits, but there could potentially be, you know, like a 20 greatest, you know, Luke Snyder episodes, or the 20 greatest Lisa episodes, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Disc 3 is Oakdale Through the Years, and episode 1 of that is the 30th anniversary of the show. Give us a quick highlight from that episode.
This is, I think, the best anniversary episode ever on soaps. And the whole week was really good. Chris and Nancy were celebrating 50 years of marriage, and the show, that was kind of the backdrop of the show celebrating 30 years. And a lot of people came back. They'd sort of started writing out the Stewarts. That was one thing Doug Marlin did that a lot of traditionalists didn't like. He wrote out Dee Stewart and some other people. So they all came back. Penny came back. Don came back, their kids. So a lot of people came back. At the end, Chris and Nancy, and everybody sing it always, and then Chris and Nancy kind of sing it to each other as the last bit. And this was, I think, the last episode Don McLaughlin was in. He died right after this, was shot. And he looked really frail anyway during this. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it's just so perfect. And it sums up, like, why those of us who've watched for, you know, many years and with our families, like, why we love soaps. I think this is the best episode on the whole thing.
Episode 2 is the 40th anniversary. So what was that about? Or what was the general theme of that episode?
You know, this, you know, if you know, this definitely isn't like Roger Newcomb's top 20 episodes of all time. Because I probably would have put some Tom and Margot on the Run with Mr. Big, and, you know, there, some Craig and Sierra or whatever, you know. But at one point we were going to do an anniversaries disc. So one was going to be anniversary. So we had a couple from... We had two from the 30th, one from the 40th, the 50th, and then Bob and Kim. I think that was the combo at the time. And then another one was Christmas. So somehow that all got sort of mixed together, and one Christmas episode got here with some anniversary stuff. So we kept the 40th. It's good in terms of there's some great flashbacks. Nancy and Dan had Alzheimer's at the time, her second husband. He called everybody over to Bob and Kim's house when they actually still had a house. And everybody's like, what's going on? What's the big announcement? And basically the announcement was, we don't really have an announcement. You know, I just had a thought. Everybody really needs to seize the day. I'm going to live the rest of my life the way, you know, to make the most of it or whatever. And, you know, it was nice. You got to see all the characters from that era. So where we, you know, we don't have anything else from 1996. You basically see everybody on that episode. So if you were a fan of the show from that time, you kind of get to see your favorites. Nancy reads a poem from or something Chris wrote in his journal that I think it was actually something Erna Phillips wrote. There's a really racy Mark and Connor, I think, love scene there, which I could have done without. But it's really, but everybody has fans, right? Like, it's not just,
yeah.
I tried to really think of this as how many, you know, with good episodes, how many different people could we show? So everybody could have their favorite here in some capacity. I mean, obviously, you know, if you started watching 5 years ago, you might have wanted, you know, like all Paul and Meg or
oh,
Emily.
Lord.
And,
oh,
you know,
God.
So, you know, but since we had this 32 years, we wanted to represent classics. I just wanted to cross-section. A lot of these shows have flashbacks in them. So you get to see, even though we don't have stuff before 79, you get to see flashbacks of episodes that were, you know, in black and white. So, you know, this one has a lot of flashbacks as well. And it's just a good family episode.
Now, episode 3 is one I remember, the Divas on the Bus episode, where all of the divas were on a bus together, and it was in honor of Helen Wagner, Nancy. Great episode, and it was one of those classic ones in the last, you know, decade of the show that really did pay homage to the history. What went into selecting that one?
You know, they originally said, "How about the other episode?" And I'm like, "It's sitcoms." I'm like, "You're putting out a, I don't know." I hated that sitcom thing. I mean, I thought this would be really funny if it was like in the summer and it wasn't representing anything. But I thought as a 50th anniversary tribute, you know, recreating Laverne and Shirley wasn't really the way to pay tribute to As the World Turns. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a fun thing for the actors, and they really did a great job. This episode, you know, they picked these seven classic divas, and it was great for what it was. To me, As the World Turns is everybody's together at the Hughes living room or something and a big party, and that's sort of how I wanted the show to go out. But, you know, this is you get to see all these ladies. There's more flashbacks. You know, Barbara fights a bear. There's so many things
Lord,
going on.
You mean
on.
Barbara had to fight a bear too? What is up with some women fighting bears?
Yeah, you know, I remember Barbara. This is when Barbara was still pretty bad. I mean, you know, Barbara went from young, innocent, you know, poor. She wasn't even, you know, I think in the 79 episode that we talked about, Barbara is so young. Colleen, she was just, she started in 78, and she's dating Tom Tammy's Tom. So he was like Tom number 9 or whatever before Justin D's. And I think at that point she was kind of holding out, like not having sex, and Tom eventually had an affair on her. By this point, Barbara had gone through being a bitch, being a housewife, being nice again, then being evil again. And so she everybody was hungry, starving. Barbara found a candy bar, so she snuck off to eat it, and then it attracted a bear. And
what is this, Legends of the Fall? You know, I just watched that last night, so of course people fighting bears is in my mind right now.
It is funny. I mean, in retrospect, like at the time I wasn't, you know, I thought they could have done something more with the two episodes that they did for the 50th. But in retrospect, you know, just really paying tribute to Helen Wagner, especially because she didn't make it to the very last episode. I'm really glad they did this.
Now, episode 4, Christmas at the Snyder Farm. Oh, gosh. Set that up for us.
Well, there were five, you know, originally it was going to be a Christmas theme, and there were all these themes, and it went back and forth. And this was just the fifth Christmas theme. Like, my Christmas episodes are, you know, in the 80s, where, like, Scott Holmes is playing the piano and everybody's singing Christmas carols. And, like, I'm a total sap. And then, you know, they had in later years, they did these special episodes. There was that toy dollhouse episode or whatever. They, you know, they did some special things. This was just the last Christmas. This was the only way to work an actual Luke and Noah, you know, Noah to work Noah into this. Mm-hmm. Bob narrated it. I thought that really, you know, it was basically the final Christmas in Oakdale, and Lily and Holden were apart, but they were all spending Christmas together at the Snyder Farm, and I think they kind of reminisced a little bit. I mean, I think they were kind of missing each other. Lucinda, Noah was blind at this point. Lucinda surprised everybody and brought him in. You know, it's kind of a bittersweet. It's not like, you know, my favorite upbeat Christmas episode, but it is the last one in Oakdale. It sort of represents a certain time period, and, you know, like I said, if I wasn't managed in some way, I would have put everything from the 80s here. So, you know, they had to keep reeling me back. You know, you got to, like, spread this out a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably a good thing because, you know, I know that a lot of the newer fans will probably – even you know, even though, you know, soap aficionados and you know, long-term fans of the genre prefer the 80s and things like that. A lot of these online fans who probably might be the ones who actually will log in and do the buying, you know, a lot of them, you know, love the later years of the show. I know our Melody Ackles, who's kind of been our P&G person, you know, she's a baby. She's 22, and she, you know, and she's also savvy and smart and knows good soap, so I know she's excited. The first thing she was like, because, you know, God Light was her heart and soul. So she's like, when is my God Light coming? I'm like, girl, buy this As the World Turns with it, then we'll get God Light. So,
yeah, you know, we talked about
what I understand,
about,
you almost need a Roger Thorpe DVD on that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they put out a VHS tape of Roger Thorpe. When was it? Early 90s, Jamie?
Yes,
really,
they were,
really, really well done.
I wasn't watching the show then, but I was so jealous because I was like, why did they do that for my Santa Barbara? Because, you know, they had Reva, the scandal years or something, and Roger.
You know, that Reva tape, and I actually have it, it plays like a movie. It's like 45 minutes, and the way they spliced that together, it really plays like a movie. And you can watch it having never seen Reva or knowing who Kim Zimmer is and really get invested in it. So they did a great job. You know, this was, we were talking before about Luke and Noah. This was kind of the way to work that in. It wasn't like a classic Luke and Noah episode. It just didn't fit into the categories. And it's the same thing with a lot of couples, like Craig and Sierra or Duncan and Shannon or all of these people that I would have loved to feature more. And, you know, the hope was there were going to be lots of these discs and things could, you know, be shown over time. So we just wanted a cross-section of stuff. And then, you know, Noel Beck is Lily on this one, but final Christmas in Oakdale, basically.
Yeah. Well, and Roger, you know, you mentioned Erna Phillips. You posted on We Love Soaps the amazing original story Bible for As the Earth Turns, as she planned to call it. And you mentioned something about how you would have ended the show more with a group thing. And I read that this weekend. I remember reading the parts. For those of you who visit We Love Soaps, they are the kings of part 1 through 75. So I remember, like, catching it. I'd read the first part, then I go, ooh, I can't wait. And, you know, I'd get busy and think about it again. But you recently have republished it all as one document. So I was like, yes! So I read that on Friday, and it was just so inspirational. And one of the themes that kept playing over and over again, she kept saying, this is the story of a family. There is no lead character. So it was all about how the Hughes family and the Lowell family were a character together. So, I mean, I think that, you know, by picking episodes that do show the entire town of Oakdale as they interact and come together is really honoring her original vision for the show.
Well, that was, you know, that was a debate. I kept getting pushback. Let's put the final episode on. We need to show the final episode. And I said, I'm begging you. I hated it. Please, like, don't. It summed up everything that was wrong with the show the past few years. I mean, they set it up really well in terms of the conclusion of the show could have easily been Bob's retirement party. Everybody could have still done all the same things. Even if they wanted Margot to swap houses with Katie, they could have all done it at this party where everybody's together in traditional As the World Turns style. And I was publishing that Bible. Martha Byrne found it in her basement or her parents' basement or somewhere and gave it to me. And so thanks to her for that. But I kept publishing that like early 2010 because I was hoping World Turns would see it and kind of say, hey, this is what the show was originally supposed to be about. Maybe we can go back to this because they had a little time to wrap it up. But yeah, I mean, I didn't like the final episode. You know, it hasn't even aired everywhere. I mean, I think people probably could find it on YouTube or something. But, you know, in the Netherlands, I think they're, you know, a few months away from the end. So they haven't even seen that episode yet.
Okay. Well, now, what you did pick for episode 5 on this this collection is Bob and Kim's 25th anniversary, which I read many a comment in our comments section that people felt like that could have been a great ending for the show, which was Bob and Kim's 25th anniversary and them finding out that they weren't legally wed and Julianne Moore reprising the role of their daughter. That was a no-brainer.
This is where you can get a few – you get to see Katie. You get to see Trent. Trent and – Colleen, Trent, and Henry and Barbara like having sex in the upstairs bathroom or something. There's things that are not traditional As the World Turns happening here, but you know, it was great for what it was. You know, I think I told you maybe at the time offline, if you watch the 30th anniversary and you have the entire town together, historical characters brought back, everybody singing Chris and Nancy's song, like that's really a high point. And then when you get to this, you know, you have everybody at Tom and Margo's little house, which got smaller and smaller and smaller over the years. And Bob and Kim don't even have a house anymore, which was sad. But for 2010 and the budget they had and the sets they had and the restrictions they had, I think this was about the best they could do. Although I hate the twist where soap couples weren't really married, like the Hortons or Bob and Kim. Like, I watched the wedding, right? It's on here. It didn't seem like that illegitimate at the time, but it ends happy. You know, you get to see Nancy. I think she aired maybe one more time after this, but you know, this has Helen Wagner. There's a toast at the end. The whole Hughes family is together, and it really did. I even thought at the time, I wish they would have kind of saved this for the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. You mentioned that because I was just, you know, on a side note about the houses getting smaller. Because, you know, you watch Days of Our Lives and cover it for We Love Soaps as we do for Daytime Confidential. And so one of my – I think my two favorite sets – of course, I love all the mansion sets in soaps. I loved Corey Mansion. I loved Capwell Mansion.
Where this is going.
But I loved me some Iris Wheeler's penthouse on Another World, the pink penthouse, as I call it. And I loved me some John and Marlena's penthouse on Days. And that penthouse – has turned into a dorm room. So yeah, tends to happen.
When World Turns went to permanent sets, you know, a lot of shows did stuff like this. They basically went to permanent sets so that they never had to take them up and down and saving money on crew doing that. You know, Lily's mansion, you talked about Lily falling down the stairs.
Yeah.
She had a big mansion, and then suddenly she had like a den where the kitchen and everything's in the same room.
A kitchenette. You know, that's what, you know, I used to, like, when I would interview Victoria Rowell a lot back during the beginning of her frustration about The Young and the Restless, that's one thing she would talk about. And that's when I was like, okay, these Y&R stars are spoiled, because she was always talking about Drew just having a kitchenette and, you know, her being a supermodel and Neil being an executive. I'm like, girl, watch some of these other shows. You got multi-millionaires living in dorm rooms in Oakdale, Illinois. So, but anyway, back to the good, because again, that's the one thing. We have had to gripe, and you know this, because you guys, I love We Love Soaps, because you look at the bright side as much as humanly possible. And like, I'm just not going to lie, we have been bitching for 5 years on this podcast, and it's so awesome. You know, I was ecstatic, and you know, I think any true soap fan who has been clamoring for some sort of preservation, should be excited about this. It's time for people to put their money where their mouth is.
That's what I was just going to say.
Because we've all been wanting something like this. And so, you know, it's like haters to the left. I don't have time for any negativity because this is amazing. Hollywood is nothing if not copycats. So if this collection is popular and does well, who knows? The company that owns the rights to Santa Barbara might finally get up off the stick. I mean, I think...
Right, you know, I talked to, you know, the doctors. Remember like 3 or 4 years ago, the doctors was maybe coming to the Hallmark Channel. And then I've been in touch with those guys for years now. Like, I keep asking them, like, you know, every 6 months, like, what's happening with the doctors? And you know, Hallmark changed management and that sort of went belly up. But you know, I just talked to them a few weeks ago and they said, you know, we have a possible cable deal in the works and they're still working it. So that's not out of the question. And that, like you said, I think this could lead to so many more things, not just for the P&G shows, but any of them. You know, somebody just has to break through. So if you, in history, you know, Family Guy came back from cancellation how many times because of DVD sales. So you never know what could happen. I don't know that, you know, I think this particular company, they're a distribution type situation. But, you know, if these sold really, really well, some production company out there might say, hey, why don't we make a new Guiding Light or a new Another World?
It might incentivize shows like, say, Days of Our Lives to incentivize what they already have as a way to keep those shows on the air.
Right. You know, one of the reasons we put this on our blunders list, not merchandising. And at a time, there was some merchandise. There was an Erica Kane doll. There were different things you could buy. But I always thought they could do so much more to make money for themselves to help support the production costs because the budgets were getting smaller. Why not try to raise money doing other things? So it's, you know, I hope this does well. And it would be great if existing shows did that and help keep them on the air.
Roger, you might remember this. There was a time, I think, right after, I'd say, the Luke and Laura, from the five to six, seven-year span following the Luke and Laura craze to about the mid-'80s, when I think I saw the biggest push. I can remember a time, and yes, I bought them, and yes, I put them on my notebook, and yes, I almost got beat up at school. But you know how when you're a kid, you can get those stickers in sticker machines inside, you know, at the foyer of Walmart and stuff like that?
Yeah, I remember the kids that used to beat up getting those, yeah.
Well, I would get off of them. I would have New Kids on the Block all over my, yes, I would. And at one point, I will never forget this, there was a Roman and Marlena glitter sticker with Drake Hogan with his burly, hairy chest and Deidre Hall with her big old 80s hair. And yes, I bought that sticker. And yes, I put it on my notebook and went to school with my Roman and Marlena because he was not John then sticker. And I just look at that. I mean, you go into Target, you know, my sister is 15 now, so she's grown out of all that type of, you know, Twilights. You know, when you're 15, you start just wanting stuff that looks like adults. So, but I used to go school shopping for her every year, you know, and buy all the little stuff, you know, because I love that stuff. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy her all these little, you know, and you've never really seen that for soaps. You've never seen a, I'm like, every gay man in America would have bought a Luke and Noah notebook.
I mean, that's a great recent example of the fan base is crazy, right? Fanatical. A guy puts a clip of the first kiss online and it gets like 1 million or 2 million hits over one weekend. We've never seen anything like that before with a daytime soap. And they recognized it. They talked about it in interviews, but they never did anything about it. They sort of put them on the back burner and banned them from ever kissing again.
So right.
Like the total, you know, they didn't want to make money. There was, you know, Luke and Noah, they could have made so much money selling these things online or just putting extra, you know, shooting an extra scene when they're on set and selling that scene on iTunes or 99 cents or whatever.
Well, you know, a lot of that is, well, you know, you and I know that it was a lot of Procter & Gamble probably fearing alienating a segment of their audience. But this is why this is cool, in my opinion, because for the, you know, this won't be measured on demographics. It's just about money. It'll be just about this will prove who the fans are, because we always get the campaigns when the gay couples come on the scene. But, you know, you and I both know that the gay audience is pretty much an affluent one. And DVDs are an equalizer because it won't be about women 18 to 49 or people in the South. It's just going to be about who logs in and puts their, you know, credit card information in to buy it. And I think that's amazing.
Right. Yeah, I agree. You know, I talked when I first met with him, I talked about, you know, what are the long-term plans? And this was sort of, I think Subclassics just sort of got this deal going in July. So it's been put together really fast. And it's amazing that they pulled it off. And, you know, the sales are all online. And, you know, I think for the future, possibly, you know, next year, if this thing continues, if it does well and they have incentive to actually continue, you know, we might see this retail stores because, you know, I think like a Walmart or something is the perfect place to sell this. I know, like, my sisters stopped watching World Turns a long, long time ago, but they're always at Walmart, and they would totally just pick one up and throw it in their shopping cart if it was there at the impulse line. So I think this, you know, this could potentially end up in stores, and that'll be even more sales. And I think that's great. You know, these stars that we've loved for decades actually will have merchandise out in stores or you know, and now online. So it's great. So, you know, that could happen too, aside from, you know, online streaming and who knows what else, you know, it could end up in stores.
You know, another option is we see it like nightly with the Carol Burnett collection as an infomercial, you know, with the three of the stars of the Carol Burnett show kind of host a infomercial. I mean, could you imagine Eileen Fulton, Colleen, Martha hosting an infomercial, you know, where they basically hosted by Roger Newcomb? See?
Well, I'm actually talking to Eileen. I'm going to be talking to Eileen this week about this and just kind of getting her take on it. And, you know, I haven't decided. You know, I'm going to talk to a few of the actors, and I may do a sort of like a, it's not included in the DVD set, but just my own personal, you know, take us behind the scenes of this episode kind of thing with some of the actors. And because I haven't really seen that for some of these. You know, I love the 30th anniversary, but I haven't really talked to Eileen or anybody about what it was like for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, disc four, the final disc on this 20-disc collection is Villains and Vixens. Episode one is The Return of James Stenbeck. Now, does this include the famous "Hello, Barbara"?
Right. This is that kind of happens at the very beginning of the episode, and yeah, that's such a famous clip. And you know, some of these you can find on YouTube. I mean, people put these things on YouTube, and that's been a great resource for soap fans. But you know, this is, you know, DVD quality stuff, and like things like the Tom and Margot First Wedding, that's on YouTube, but it's like the audio doesn't match the video. And you know, like, we're so desperate we'll watch anything because we love soap history. But you know, this is, you know, great quality stuff. So yeah, this is Hello, Barbara. I think everybody knows this, and I think some of these, including this one, are things anybody would have put down. Like if you were saying, you know, let me sketch down my first like five episodes, they probably would have included this because it's such a famous moment. Mm-hmm. And it was before everything got spoiled months in advance, so we had no idea it was going to happen. So it was a real shocker.
Yeah, those people who spoil that stuff just make me sick. Oops. That's us.
Well, no, I mean, Jamie, the things you spoil – no. A lot of times are things that are like behind the scenes type thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but the shows themselves, this is the thing that drives me crazy. They send out spoilers to everybody, basically explaining everything that's going to happen. So, you know, it's
and then they blame us, but it's like, we don't really spoil story. Like, but all you have to do, and Lord, don't get me on the promos these days. ABC is the worst. I'm sitting there watching, and yes, you know, doing this, a lot of the times we know what's going to happen because we hear stuff. But I recently, I was all invested in the Two Todd story, and I kind of had gone into that fan space in my head where I had kind of forgotten anything I thought I knew or had heard or rumors. And I'm watching the episode, and then the next commercial is, now that Irene Manning is dead, and I'm like, well, god dang.
they keep doing that, and it's totally sabotaging themselves.
Yeah, that would be like, who shot JR? You're watching, and all the tension is playing out, and then the commercial is, well, now that whole Kristen is floating in the Ewing pool, what's next? You know, it's like, thanks. But, yeah, that's just not – that department's not communicating. But, again, back to the positive. Episode 2 of the Villains and Vixens collection is when Villain Meets Vixen. Now, what is that about? It's
this is John and Lucinda in the hot tub. I mean, anybody that's around, you know, I'm 41, anybody around my age or who watched in the 80s, this would definitely be another thing they would put on. I think we remember it as the, you know, hot tub scene. When you watch the episode, though, it's sort of, they're in the beginning, he falls in the hot tub or something, and then he pulls her in, and then they're not there for a while. Then at the very end, and John is sort of dating Emma at the time, Emma Snyder.
Emma?
And, yeah. And so, and John and Lucinda couldn't stand each other. So they're in the hot tub together. We don't see them again. At the end, Emma knocks on John's door. John's like, hey, how's it going? And then Lucinda goes in and says, John, you can't have women over here now that we're married. And it's like totally shocking. Emma's shocked. We're shocked. It's like a great ending. And that was the Friday of the last episode of Capital. Mm-hmm. Because Monday, Bold and the Beautiful was debuting, and they were moving as the world turns back 30 minutes. And mm-hmm. so... I can't remember exactly what she said, but I interviewed Elizabeth Hubbard, Lucinda, like the second to last day at the World Turn set. And she was talking about that scene and how some of it she came up with. It was sort of improvised, and mm-hmm. she came up with some of it. I can't remember the whole story, but World Turns came on after Young and the Restless. And then they were moving it back 30 minutes to try to promote Bold and the Beautiful in the middle of those two. And they wanted to create a real shocking moment to get people to tune in at the new time slot. So that was it. Mm. John and Lucinda are married.
I can't wait to see that one, because my vision of Emma is just Emma cooking fried chicken on Snyder Farm and running in behind that crazy Emily. So it'll be cool to see her with a life of her own and a romance. Oh, now episode 3, John Dixon Takes a Fall. What set that up for us?
No, I love the early 80s on the show. And if you look at the website, today, this weekend, there are a few dates wrong here. There's a few things they're correcting, and I talked to them, and they're fixing it. This was a 1981 episode, actually, and I love the early 80s. A lot of people, traditionalists, didn't like it because Chris and Nancy sort of went away, and they were focusing on young couples, but I liked all that. And mm-hmm. But at the time, Margot hadn't really hooked up with Tom. She was in love with James Stenbeck. And this is, I think Margot was still a nurse then before she became a cop. Because you can just do that overnight.
Right.
He's blind or faking blind, or at one point I think he really is blind, but later on he fakes being blind. Anyway, he's arguing with her. Get away from James Stenbeck. He's a loser. He's horrible. She runs up the stairs and he chases her, and then he ends up falling down. It's a great episode. Dana Delaney's on it. I was really trying to find one with Peter Reckle and Dana Delaney from 81, but I really couldn't find just the right thing that fit mm-hmm. the set. But that's when they were both on the show.
Now, and Margaret Conlin, was she the – Colin, it's Margaret Conlin. Was she playing Margot in this episode?
Yes, I love her so much.
You babies that are listening, that's Blair's mom on Gossip Girl.
And right, so she's in this one, and then she's in the Tom and Margot wedding. So she's in a couple of the episodes. She was great. I mean, all the Margots have been, well, except that one Margot in the 90s we'll forget about, but they've all been good, the ones that played the character for a long time.
And Margot, yeah, Hillary B. Smith played it, Ellen Dolan played it. So Margot is kind of, you know, had a lot of good actors in the part. So episode 4 is Humiliation, and it's a Lisa-themed show.
Yeah, we sort of said, you know, we kind of came up with this category, and I was trying to pick characters to feature. And, you know, I wanted to make sure Carly was on here, and so I sort of, you know, I did the Carly in the Secrets and Scandals and the Carly and Jack wedding. So I wanted Lisa to be one of the vixens. Of course, she's the first bitch of television. I mean, I wanted to pay more tribute to her than they did on the final episode of the show. This isn't
well,
the original.
That doesn't take much.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'll show up for 2 seconds and have somebody insult her. But this isn't the original episode I picked for her. But you know, they wanted something to kind of represent this time frame. So they said, could you change one of these out to? Originally, there were like 4 from the 80s and 1 from the 2000s. So they're like, could you give us a 90s episode? Just kind of mix. They wanted each disc to kind of have a mix of things. So I was like, this is the episode where Lisa had sued John for malpractice because her husband Eduardo died. And
Eduardo.
He was he was a different character on Our Private World. Like, he was on As the World Turns two different times. But anyway, so to get back at Lisa, he romanced her. They got engaged, had a big engagement party. At the party on the big screen, he just said, you know, this has all been a ruse. You're horrible, and I hate you, and humiliated her in front of the whole town. And but it was great performances, and Eileen was really great in this, Eileen Fulton. And it was another thing where the whole town was together, so you can kind of get a sense of, you know, all your favorite characters at the time versus an episode maybe that featured 10 people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this features as many people as possible from this year.
And the final episode of the 20-disc collection is The Trials of Barbara Ryan. And this is when she went on trial for kidnapping Rose, Emily, and Carly.
There are so many. I mean, I've loved Barbara forever since I can remember. You know, in 32 years on the show, you could pick, you know, hundreds of episodes of Barbara that would be perfect. Mm-hmm. I love the early 80s stuff. Barbara and Gunner were my favorite. Barbara couple. It just couldn't all be 80s, right? Like, I had to force myself to think outside the box. And so she was on trial multiple times. There was a trial where she jumped through the window or whatever. I picked this one because you probably remember that, where she said, like, screw you guys, and she jumped out. This one is her first trial when she had been disfigured. She had the three women kidnapped and sent to the Swiss spa and turned the two of them into old women.
God, that was so much fun back
so,
then.
So this features like a before the trial starts, she has like this nightmare of, you know, everybody trying to lynch her or I forget what they're doing. They're burning her at the stake. They have like this cross. It's kind of crazy. And Lamond Rucker is her lawyer. And Jessica is the prosecutor, or, you know, so I wanted to show those two because they're great actors on the show and they really didn't get featured in other ways, especially Tamara Tooney, who's awesome. So, you know, you get to see Rose. There isn't a lot of, you know, you don't get to see like a Rose episode. You get to see Rose. You get to see Emily and Carly here as well. So it's another good thing where, you know, the town is there. You get to see a lot of people in Oakdale from 2002. So that's sort of why I went with this one. But, you know, Lamond Rucker, who was a great character, and they ruined him by having him rape Jessica. Mm-hmm. Marshall, he basically says, you know, we have three victims, Rose, Emily, and Carly, but then Barbara is the fourth victim in all this, and everybody's like rolling their eyes. It was when the show had really crisp dialogue, and, you know, a lot of episodes are really funny and really, you know, in jokes or sexual innuendo and stuff like that. It was really well written.
Well, the entire collection just sounds amazing. I have to tell you, I went ahead the first day, and mine should be here tomorrow because I went ahead and did the two-day express rush because I cannot wait really to watch the ones that I haven't seen. I can't wait to watch those classic moments. Hello, Barbara. And like you said, you know, yeah, they're on YouTube, but the thing of it is, I just bought, you know, the first season of Dallas, and there's a ton of that on YouTube. But there's nothing like being able to sit on your couch and just watch 10 to 15 episodes of one of your favorite shows in one sitting. And I think that's amazing. I think this is a great undertaking. You guys have done an awesome job, in my opinion, of getting it up. I mean, you know, this quickly, and yeah, and with all the other stuff that is planned with the, you know, I know that you blogged on We Love Soaps that Guiding Light will be the next collection that they release, and the streaming component is coming. So this just could really become a huge hub for classic fans of these classic soaps.
Right. You know, I wanted to explain a little bit about the process of
oh yeah, please,
you know,
do.
One of the first things that I saw people say, like a few weeks before this came out, and you know, there we've been working on a press release, and this was going to come out, and then Jamie totally stole the scoop, and like she always does. And
sorry, this was not my fault though. It was on the back of Wheel magazine.
I think it was, well, you know, the print ads have to go in, you know, a couple of weeks earlier or whatever, and you know, the announcement was going to come out way before that, so there was never any question. And then I think it maybe took a little longer to get, you know, the website going and everything. And they wanted to sort of wait till the day the website was up and announce it. And you know, they didn't realize that these magazines were going to be out before Friday. So anyway, the process, though, the first time I went over to the office, there were these tapes everywhere. And if you think of like it's like an old TV master tape. Most of them are the round tapes, are like 2 inches thick and round and like a, you know, a foot wide. So really big, bulky tapes. Some of them are like on these double-sized VHS tapes, but most of them are these big, round, reel-to-reel type tapes, stacked up down the hall, around the hall. It's like, you know, a sea of tapes, like 8,000 As the World Turns episodes and then Guiding Light episodes. You wouldn't believe it. And so what we had to do was, you know, I knew a lot of these things by the episode date, right? So I knew Luke came out May 9th, 2006. But unlike primetime shows where you can go there and it'll tell you like the episode number, season 2, episode 5, unfortunately all these tapes were marked with episode numbers only. So, you know, in a lot of cases I had a date or I had to find a date, but there was no reference to an episode number. So we would have to watch, you know, take out these big clunky tapes, put them on the reel-to-reel machine, watch them, and then I'd be like, oh, I think we went too far ahead. I had to take a guess of what the episode number was. You know, episode 7,852. It's kind of crazy because there's so many. And so we never, you know, in some cases I watched 20 episodes just to find the right one. I thought I would never find Steve and Betsy's Wedding. Meg Ryan being difficult again. But, yeah, it was a long process. So what they have to do is they take these old tapes, the master, television master tapes. They have to encode them and do all these things. So you think about thousands and thousands and thousands of tapes. I mean, it takes a long time. So just to do these and get them ready and get them out on DVD was a long process. And I remember like when a few weeks before there was an article came out, and I think it wasn't really supposed to come out, but it talked about international distribution. And I think it revealed some stuff that wasn't supposed to be discussed yet or whatever. But somebody commented on our site, well, this is silly. Why can't they just put everything online right now? And so I just wanted to explain, you know, these are just big old tapes.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure if they could just put the whole thing online and sell all every episode from 79 forward, and it was that simple, they would definitely do it right away. It's just, it's a long process of actually taking these tapes, encoding them, digitizing them, or whatever they have to do to, you know, put them on the web.
Mm-hmm. And the bandwidth that would be required if you were to just do all that at once would have been, you know, insurmountable. It would be, you know, we'd have a lot of, we've seen a lot of situations where sites end up crashing often because of things like that. And, you know, yeah, it that's the thing. None of these things are simple or easy. Yeah, I interviewed Mark, and, you know, that interview will, this interview will, with you, is going to air on Daytime Confidential before the interview I did with Mark Yates, the president. And, you know, because I wanted to find out about the music issue, and because, you know, that's always been one of, there's like five things that, you know, the powers that be always utter off when they say they can't do something like this. And, you know, all the popular music was one of the issues. And he talked about the, you know, the process that went through. So this is, you know, this is work. I mean, it's not just as easy as, you know, it's easy. And I do it. It's easy to play armchair quarterback and go, well, why don't people just do this like this right now? Why don't they just go ahead and just put everything, all of Barbara's story, on one DVD now? You know, but it's like, okay. And, you know, when just regular fans say that, I get it. But it's really annoying when industry experts say stuff like that. I'm like, do you cover this industry? Do you realize what an insurmountable task this type of thing would be? So,
I mean, the fact that there was no, like, complete episode list with air date and episode number. So, mm-hmm. You know, just figuring out the air dates wasn't easy. Sometimes I would just tweet mysteriously, hey, does anybody know the exact date of the Lillian Holden wedding? Because, you know, I asked Martha. She's like, I don't know. I was, like, 5 months pregnant at the time. I don't know what I was doing. So I tweeted it, and then Brandon's Buzz said, oh, it was January 12, 1998. So I was like, oh, good. So then we created this spreadsheet of episode converters. So we knew the last episode was like 13,000 whatever. And then we went backwards. But then you have all these preemptions, and you're trying to figure out. So we would get into a range and say, okay, this is around episode 9,000, and then start watching them. And you know, put the reel-to-reel on. It takes a few minutes. Start watching. I'm not always sure. And, you know, I need to figure out, do we need to go ahead a number, go backwards? And sometimes I have to watch a lot of it. And so, you know, it took a while just to, like, nail these down.
Jamie mentioned putting your money where your mouth is, and as we were talking, I went and ordered my copy as well, and I got thinking about it. It's like 20 episodes for less than $20.
Right.
That's less than you can buy on iTunes for a song. That's less than a cup of coffee at Starbucks on a daily basis. Or, well, hell, it's almost three episodes per cup of coffee. Fantastic value, and you'll have it forever.
And this is the right company to do this. The Soap Classics folks, I think about 5 years ago, or probably less than that, because I posted it on We Love Soaps at the time, a company called Power Corp bought the licensing rights or something to internationally distribute World Turns and Guiding Light. And I don't think they really knew what they were doing or whatever. But this company, you know, they're a distributor, but they're also the technical folks who can encode these things and get them ready for DVDs in the web. So they kind of do both things. And it's actually the perfect situation for old soap tape. So, yeah, like we said, I hope this does really well. I hope we get more of the P&G shows. I hope we get other shows. I hope this helps the people who are trying to pitch the doctors out to get that coming back. And who knows? We may get new versions of these shows at some point, or somebody might be inspired to create a whole new soap based on seeing this. You never know.
Now, and SoapClassics.com is a division of Broadway Video, which is Lorne Michaels' company, right?
Well, Broadway Video is Lorne Michaels' company, and then Broadway Video Digital Media is sort of the Soap Classics folks. It's sort of a subset of that. You know, they do digital media stuff and distribution, and so I know they're working on international distribution. There's a lot of things in the works in terms of that, and you know, if you can sell World Turns to India or some country with this humongous population, you suddenly have...
And where serialized drama is still king. And
right, you get millions of new people seeing it. And I think P&G shows, and we may have talked about this before, but you know, you see Bold and the Beautiful being so popular, and sometimes I wonder why around the world. You know, P&G shows, it seems like, never had that. Like, you have, you know, Guiding Light in Italy is popular, As the World Turns in the Netherlands, but never like this big international following. And I don't think they really knew how to do it. I don't think they knew how to distribute their own show. So, you know, it would be great if this suddenly took off in other countries, too.
I think one thing we've, you know, joked about over the years, B&B and Santa Barbara before it have been hugely popular internationally. And I think it's really that Hollywood version of California, the California life, the California dream, the beautiful blonde girl, you know, in love with the dark haired man, you know, because I really think, you know, because if you're, you know, just in, you know, a French or a Latin country, that's such a fantasy. You had the Cruise and the Eden, and, you know, with B&B, you know, of course, Ridge is Caucasian, but he's dark and ethnic looking, and so you have that, you know, I think a lot of that has been just there was more of a fairy tale aspect to their romances, and whereas, you know, the P&G soaps were really family dramas. They were really, especially if you go back to how Erna originally envisioned them, and how, especially with As the World Turns, how Douglas Marlin wrote, you know, when he masterfully revitalized it. It was really, and we don't have that anymore. And as I was reading that As the Earth Turns Bible, I'm like, okay, this is how someone today would write a Bible for a Shameless or a Parenthood or a Brothers and Sisters. You know, Roger, we've talked about this before, and, you know, I grew up watching soaps in the 80s, but I really feel cheated in a lot of ways now because I loved that era, but I really wish I could have seen the 70s and the 60s when they were, you know, just really well-written family dramas, because, it, you know, everything post Luke and Laura went, you know, action adventure, and the one thing I will give them though is that they balanced it out. I mean, you're in the 80s, the soaps would have that over the top romantic super couple story that might have someone battling super spies or things of that nature, but there was always a Grandma Horton or a Nancy Hughes or, you know, the Bowers on Guiding Light that kind of kept things rooted in reality. But, you know, and then in the 90s, it just who knows what happened. I think fear after.
Yeah, I mean, look at our blunders list. There's so many things. I think the network started interfering more.
Yes.
These were the cash cows of the networks. Primetime even lost money in some cases, and daytime financed that. And it just sort of, I think they started tinkering with it, and
I think it was panic. I think the OJ erosion caused so much panic that the network executives decided we have to figure this out because we're going to lose this genre. And James Riley, of course, had so much success with his over-the-top stories on Days. So they were like, we all have to mimic that. Every soap has to do that. And so it ended up being Microchip City.
every writer, even the best, I mean, Doug Marlin had some clunkers. Caroline Crawford murder went on for like 100 years. And, As World Turns had Shannon's shrunken head. And there's all these things. But, you know, one of the things we said in that list was, you know, the over-reliance of soap cliches. You know, when James Sinbeck came back from the dead in 1986, we were completely shocked. First of all, it wasn't spoiled like it would be today, but it didn't happen all the time. You know, from 86 forward, he came back from the dead like 10 more times. Seeing on One Life to Live.
But you want him back in town.
Oh, you know what?
But it's like, you know, when he came back, Barbara was shocked. And you'll see on this episode, she's so shocked. And somebody back from the dead is shocking. By the time he came back the 10th time, it's like, oh, James is back. Even though we saw him die, you know, last week or a year ago, he got shot. And, you know, they just stopped having a reaction to it. And it just sort of became normal for people to come back from the dead.
Yeah. Roger, you and I both were interviewed for the for Alina Adams' new book, the soap opera 451 Time Capsule. And I know my readers would think this is crazy since I hate Return from the Dead, but my memory that I wrote about was Marlena's return in 91, because that was about the last time a return from the dead was an event for me in daytime. And that's going on 20 years, because now death means nothing in soaps. Unless the actor dies in real life, you know. I mean, you can get your heart dug out of your chest and put in somebody else's body and you will still come back. And I really do. They all have made the mistake of going to the return from the dead, the doppelganger, these cliched stories that they rely on. Even writers we love. I love Ron Carlovati, but right now he's doing doppelgangers on One Life to Live after having done such amazing stuff in the last couple of years. They need to just throw out these soaps that are still in the air. They've got to throw that shit out. They've got to throw out Returns from the Dead and Doppelgangers and Microchips and Brain Control. That shit was hot in the 80s because it was something that was new to the genre. But by 2011, anytime a character acts out of character, we no longer think, oh, what's their inner motivation? It's, oh, who put a microchip in their butt? No, but anyway, we could have you on again and again and again, and we will have you back on as this continues to roll out. Congrats on being a part of this awesome project with SoapClassics.com. Everyone, you can go, if you haven't already, please go to www.SoapClassics.com, where you can buy your As the World Turns DVD collection for $19.95, and I cannot wait for the others to come out. And also, you can visit Roger Newcomb's site, We Love Soaps, www.welovesoaps.com or net, and you can see all of the in-depth information he has. Of course, you can also visit us at www.daytimeconfidential.zaptoit.com. Roger, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Everybody go buy this. It's the perfect Christmas present for your aunt, your grandma, your mom, everybody. You know, buy 10 copies.
Absolutely. Buy it so that we can get Another World and have Jensen Buchanan on DVD.
Oh, my.
No, we're going to be featuring Ellen Wheeler on that one. We'll have that fight later, Luke.
Okay, both of y'all need to back up because it
Jensen
is
Buchanan
and Hesh. Do you want me to do the voice?
Oh, gosh.
Do you know how many times I dressed up in a black turtleneck and pretended to be Vicki Hudson? Okay, that's for me and my therapist. But anyway, thanks for being here, Roger, and come back anytime.
All right, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.